One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, the people were crowding round him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats, left there by fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken, and so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him.
As I said at the beginning of our service, racial justice is a faith-based response to the murder of Stephen Lawrence. I was in 1993 when Stephen was killed. I was 12 years old. And as you know, I grew up down the road. So as a black man growing up in Southeast London, this is one of my key early memories. This is, in fact, probably one of the most indelible marks on my childhood that I've ever had. And through my youth work locally, I have met Stephen Lawrence's parents, mostly, I would say, Doreen, who is his mum, who works tirelessly still to this day, and is now a Lord in the House of Lords. This response in a church setting, in a faith-based setting, in a way that leads us into thinking through some maybe uncomfortableness to embrace that and to think about our own biases and to move us to action is precisely what Stephen's parents wanted and their faith community. My take on this is any time we move towards God, any time we come to church or we try and wrestle with God talk, theology, we are supposed to be changed. We are supposed to be wrestled out of how we are into something new. We choose in baptism as Christians a new birth. And that is precisely for that reason. We are to be changed, metamorphosed. We are to be reborn. God has given us a sign of what that rebirth should look like in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And as we come today to meet and to worship God and to think through in word, in song, in table, at communion, maybe in the spaces left between those things and in prayer, we have time to change internally, externally, and to think through what God is saying to us as individuals and as a community. Our Bible reading is Jesus calling the fishermen. And it's interesting to me that Jesus picks for his team from different backgrounds, not racially diverse backgrounds, that would be to stretch the information that we are given in the Bible, but not the usual suspects, not those who normally follow rabbis, but fishermen. These are not usually the best educated people. I can tell you from my own understanding, as my dad was a fisherman in the Seychelles, that usually you start that job young, very young, because it's hard and your body can only last so long doing a job like that. It takes lots of hours. And my dad left school at 12 and became a fisherman, and then has done many other things since, and is still working in his 70s. But it's that aspect of those who are poorly educated, not seen as being the ones who would lead, not seen as being those that usually would be put with a rabbi. Not being swayed by whether or not they will fit in, or they're like those who usually follow rabbis. It speaks to me that God is interested in all of us as unique and individual, and the image of God is harmed or reduced by the constructs of racism, where we make people into something that isn't a full image, where we degrade the image of God in that moment and that time. We are a unique tapestry of interconnected, interwoven beings who, although seem to be able to strive for survival in isolation, prove time and time again that we need each other in all our diversity to stop ourselves going down terrible pathways of destruction, both individually and collectively. Diversity of thought is as important as anything. I know that this is not challenging to anyone here. Our striving for justice as a church has led us to setting up a Ukrainian coffee morning that supports English learning and those displaced by war. Our striving for justice as a church has helped set up the Helping Hands Food Bank that we run with AFRL, Action for Refugees in Lewisham, and is staffed by many volunteers from here. However, we still have work to do. When we look at the data of our parish, and I'll tell you what it says. So this is from the most recent census data. So 2022, we have about 13,667 people in the parish, of which are living in 5,600 households. 62% of those are under the age of 44. And of those 62%, 24 are under 19. We have an incredibly young parish. 37% of our parish is over the ages of 45. Sorry, anyone 45 and up, I've lumped you all together because I'm 43, so here we go. And then the ethnicity data from the last census is this. And Lee is slightly different from Lewisham overall. Lewisham, as we know, is an incredibly multicultural borough. In fact, growing up here, I didn't know that there was places where black people weren't in the country until my mum moved to the West Country. And then I realized slightly different. Although people are lovely. Lewisham has always been my home. In fact, over my cultural identity of Creole, I choose Lewisham, Southeast London, because I was raised in the multicultural kind of amalgamation of things, which is Southeast London street culture. We have our own language made up of West African phrases, mostly Caribbean, patois, and lots of other things amalgamated. And if you talk to me when I'm not leading, you might find that my actual language is Southeast. I do change it for these scenarios because most people wouldn't understand what I'm saying. But in that, as a church, we sit in a parish slightly different from the rest of Lewisham, actually with a higher proportion of white ethnicities, 64.6%. And I get, and I'm not, this doesn't wash over me, that the census data actually is reductionist. we lump whole groups of people into, there are five categories on the census data: Asian, Black ethnicity, mixed ethnicity, white ethnicity, and other. That doesn't speak of the uniqueness that each of us is made in, but it does give us an idea of where we are as a church. So, of the population of the parish, 15.9% are of Black ethnicity, 8.5% are Asian ethnicity, and obviously that spans half the globe, and it's a crazy thing to think of in terms of one group. It's not this. We're talking from Korea to Bangladesh and beyond. It's ridiculous to call it one thing. But so 8.5% are of Asian ethnicity, mixed ethnicity, 7.1%, including my kids, white ethnicity, 64.6, as I've said, and other 3.9. Now, if we're honest as a church, and we look at ourselves on Sunday, we're probably falling short of representing our community. It's fine, but we need to do something about it. What would those reasons for us falling short be? We could say that due to historical issues within the Church of England, in our parish we have three Pentecostal churches, large ones. Pentecostalism isn't a Black-owned denomination by any stretch of the means. It's all over the world and in all sorts of places. But what happened in the England in the 60s and 70s and earlier was that when people emigrated here and they'd been going to Anglican churches in the rest of the Commonwealth, they were stopped from coming into Anglican churches in the UK, in England. I can tell you a story of my Nigerian auntie, who my own church that I came from to be here, she told me a story when I was a teenager that she wandered in there as a single mum, new to the country, and was told there's a different church down the road for you. And that was the church I grew up in. It was no longer like that, but that was the history of that church and that environment and those people. My Nigerian auntie then never went into that building again. The PCC has been doing a lot of work recently over the last few years to think, what is it that we want to strive for as a community? And two of those visions that we have are to grow younger and more diverse to match the population of the community we sit in. Now, it's easy to say, harder to do, right? And most things are judged on the doing of what we do. The saying, we're used to people saying a lot. And the PCC are working really hard to think through ways in which this can change. How do we get there? Now, to become more diverse, we have to think about those factors, those things that may be stopping people from coming. We have push and pull factors. It's complex, and as I've said, there's a history of division in the denomination we sit in. There's a history of othering of those who have tried to come in. I'm not saying that's us now, but that history is something we have to wrestle with and feel uncomfortable with and learn from. It's not so easy to reduce someone down to race. Intersectionality, this language that allows us to be whole people, that says that I am not just my race, but I'm also the sex that I have been assigned, that I am all the different things about me, my gender, my class, my sexuality, my disability, all those things interplay to whether or not I'm othered or whether or not I succeed or strive. Those things are all part of my identity and who I am. So we can't reduce it down to one thing. I often hear, as a black man standing in the front of a church, representation is really important. And yes, it is. But I'll tell you, representation goes only so far. I didn't want to become a priest for a very long time, for 20 odd years, from my calling to when I actually chose to go into this, because I had never seen anyone like me. And that wasn't just about blackness. It was about class. It was about all sorts of other things. It was about neurodiversity. It was the fact that I didn't go to private school. It was all sorts of wonderful things. But now I do feel called to represent, to stand up and be counted. However, if I do nothing about who's behind coming into leadership within the church, I have failed. All I have done is stand in front and made people feel comfortable. And yet today, I'm making everyone feel uncomfortable, and I'm really aware of that. Change comes when we look for who is centered in any form of expression, school, anywhere, any workplace, anywhere that you congregate, when you come together. There is a person, there is an image of someone who is centered. That image is then who everyone else has to fall in line with. I would love for that image to be that of Christ. That would be the thing that would be the most amazing thing. But often that image isn't. It is of someone who is stately-like, who says things in the right way, does things in the right way. But what are those right ways? Those are constructs. The work of challenging and coming to a place of racial justice is in the decentering and the moving of power. I'm going to tell you a story as we come to an end of my talk. A few weeks ago, I started a master's in theology and the God talk and transformational practices. I found myself and my first lecture really excited. I was going to learn about black theology and womanist theology. Womanist is black female theology in a feminist manner. And I was there in my lecture, and we got separated up. The men had to go into one room on Zoom, and the women were in different groups. And we were asked this question: what do we think are the issues black women face? I knew the answer to this. I was raised by black women. My sister's a black woman. I spend a lot of time with black women. But the answers that I came up with and my group came up with all centered men. It was about beauty standards and violence, male violence to women. We were thinking of ourselves. And as we came back to share, as soon as I opened my mouth to say the things, I realized I was in trouble. I don't know if you've ever been on a Zoom call with 20 theologians, mostly black feminist theologians, who are the most amazing minds this world could put together in one place, with experience, thought, and also the wherewithal to tell you about yourself. In that moment, I started crying, as I often do, as you know. And I was thinking about how bad I was and how terrible I am and what I should do about myself. Again, I centered myself. I was at the middle of all these things. Me, Chris, such an idiot. And as I was told about myself, and then the facilitator came back to me and said, how does that make you feel, Chris? I feel ashamed. I have a black mother, I have a black sister, I have two daughters, and I'm not good enough. Again, I centered myself. It was how I felt. I then was talking to one of my friends who was in the course with me, and she set me right. She said a couple of things which then made sure to make me know. about me. So I didn't ask her to train me, teach me, to meet with me afterwards so that she could tell me about why I got it wrong and what I should do to better myself. I've spent every moment since then thinking about why I'd come to that conclusion in isolation until I got to the place where I was faced with verbalizing my own bias. And once I verbalized my own bias, I knew I was wrong. As soon as it left my mouth, I knew I was in trouble. But I didn't catch myself. I didn't think it through. I didn't live it. This story is about sexism, but you could easily take it, transpose it, and put it to race. You could put it to disability. You could put it to anything, in my mind. Hopefully you can. So, let us be happy to sit in the discomfort I felt in that Zoom room. Let that discomfort move us with the Holy Spirit to action and to hold in your PCT to account. They are representatives of you. When you vote in the APCM, if you sign up to be on the electoral roll, you are holding your representatives to account. This is a democratically elected environment. Let us sit with those discomforting feelings and let the Holy Spirit move us to action. I want to use an image to help us just settle in what I've said. So if you are able and want to, could you close your eyes? I'd like for you to imagine a grand banquet. With all the pomp and ceremony that these things allow. You can have two meals. There is a standard meal that everyone, you're told, always has. It's perfectly reasonable. It's lovely. It's the standard meal. Or you can have your favorite meal, exactly as you want it, prepared by the chef to that recipe that only the person who gave you that meal first can make it. Which meal would you choose? Which would you take on? If everyone chose their favorite meal, imagine the banquets, the smells, the sounds, the smiles, the laughter as memories of that meal permeated through each person. Imagine everyone giving a little bite of that meal to their neighbor. This is my favorite meal. Try this. That favorite meal is a metaphor for the amazing differences we have in us. The diversity which brings happiness and joy and shared culture, shared food, shared laughter. That's the dream.